qu'il y a beaucoup de chirurgiens cardiaques et d'hôpitaux qui offrent la chirurgie, plus la population dont vous faites partie va se faire opérer. Là, les gens se disent « Wow, c'est fou! » Mais peut-être que c'est parce que comme ça.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, August 25th, 2022. On tonight's show, two shows that made a splash at the Fringe Fest in June are getting polished for a second look next week in a company that highlights emerging artists, tackles fame and success under a new leadership team. My guest this evening, Kristen Govers, lives with cerebral palsy, and she documents her journey balancing ambition with daily challenges from childhood to adulthood in The Awkward Ballerina.
I wanted people to understand that despite obstacles, you can do the things you want to do. Maybe they have to be a little different, but you can do them. And so that was the whole premise of this show. And for people to understand that, you know, everybody has things. We all have things, and we all have to live with those things, whatever they are.
Rebecca Gibeon assumes the mantle as co-artistic director at Persephone Productions with Layla Gayemi.
Certainly in terms of the shared values, I think she and I have both for years really, really craved theater that supports emerging artists and theater that emphasizes diverse stories. So it just so happens that it was just like this amazing thing that Persephone actually encapsulates those values already. And those are values that she and I have really cared about for years.
And Mossy Faye production, Midsummer Bushwa, delighted Fringe audiences and won the Mainline Creativity Award last June with a mix of dance, sketch comedy, and clowning. I'll check in with creator Adelia Pemberton-Smith.
I was thinking with all of the different realms we were coming at it from, and then I had a thought, oh, well, A Midsummer Night's Dream also has these different worlds colliding. Maybe we could play with that. And right as I had that thought, I was like, oh my gosh, this is too much. These are too many things. And then I decided to go with it anyways.
As well as one of her performers, Jean Bernard.
And I have faith in her. I know she, sometimes we're not too sure where we're going, but we always get there. Adalia and I know each other from doing improv together, and we even did dinner theater together, which is a brutal experience. So if you can survive that together, you can survive anything.
Meeting someone like Kristen Govers is a treat because she has a clear idea of a message and story she wants to share with you, as well as the conviction and confidence to carry it out. Kristen has had cerebral palsy from birth. It's the name of a constellation of disorders that affect a person's balance, posture, and ability to move, and it can include other symptoms like hearing or speech problems. It's often diagnosed in childhood. Over the pandemic, Kristen decided it was time to document her childhood experiences. She considered maybe writing a book, then she switched to a play, even though her last time on stage was at the age of 15 years old, performing with a choir. Despite Kristen's diagnosis, her parents encouraged her as a child to perform and to participate in sports, though the reality of her condition and the attitudes of the people around her could pose a challenge. Kristen's determination to be on stage, to be in the limelight, and strive for excellence has continued into her adulthood. As you'll hear from her, she's keen to share her story with others, and she lays it all out in Awkward Ballerina, a one-woman show that just debuted at the Fringe Festival in June, where it was nominated for an Outstanding English Production Award. Kristen is about to remount the show with two performances next week in her hometown of Pierrefonds at the Salle Pauline Julien. Here is our conversation from yesterday.
Welcome, Kristen, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
You're coming off a successful Fringe run and gearing up to present the show again. How does that feel?
amazing. Super excited. I can't wait to do the show again. Fringe was a great experience. And now I get to do it again and on the West Island, close to where I grew up. So it's pretty exciting.
What part of the West Island did you grow up in?
I grew up in Pierrefonds. So we're doing the show at the Salle Pauline Julien, which actually was booked before Fringe.
Oh, okay.
So, and then Fringe was just like a happy coincidence. And now I get to do it again. So I'm really excited.
Well, perfect for the hometown crowd. You had a very long dress rehearsal leading up to your big debut in Pierrefonds at the Salle Pauline Julien. Kristen, it's so lovely to have you here. Cerebral palsy is a condition that it could be different for every individual who has it. It's something that it pretty much affects you your whole life. How old were you when your parents realized that there was something that you weren't developing like other kids?
So normally kids tend to walk around anywhere between a year and 15 months old, and I wasn't walking. So it was, I think, around 2 that my parents said, you know, like, this is not normal and we need to get it looked at. And it actually wasn't until the second doctor that they found out I had CP, because the first doctor basically told my parents that I was going through a phase.
Okay.
my parents being my parents, they got a second opinion, and we ended up seeing a second doctor. And before he did any tests or scans, he said, I'm 99.9% sure she's got cerebral palsy. And so that's how they found out. And we went from there.
Your parents really have to be such strong advocates for you when you're at a really young age. And it sounds like they did that for you.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I think I'm blessed in my life period. I've always had a really good family. They've always been there for me, so I feel very supported. I think I felt like that at every stage in my life.
And I'm sure that's going to come up in just a moment as we get into the crux of the awkward ballerina. What does it mean for you, though, in your day-to-day life right now as an adult, to be living with cerebral palsy?
It's definitely challenging. I think every stage of my life has had a challenge, and as I became older and more aware, I guess you become more aware of those challenges. As an adult, I've had some new things emerge. Like I was pregnant. I had a son, and that was very difficult. The pregnancy was very difficult and left me with, like, I already have back problems. So after my pregnancy, those back problems just became even more severe. And I realized that, you know, doing the things I used to do isn't as easy as it was to deal with the winter weather, the cold in the winter, and the ice, the fact that I have trouble with my balance. So these things have become more challenging. And in the last couple of years, I ended up with some hearing loss. So I ended up with hearing aids, which I didn't realize was part of dealing with, you know, living with cerebral palsy, but it happens to be very common. And so now I'm wearing hearing aids. So that was something I had to adapt to. And I still am 2 years later adapting to that, because it's a different thing when you're trying to hear your kid and you don't hear them the way you want to, or, you know, people are calling out to you and you're asking them to repeat over and over again. So, but I mean, I feel very blessed, because I think with every challenge, I always have tried to find the silver lining. And so, you know, it could be worse.
You have such, I can already tell just how resolute you are, resilient you are as a person. And I'm sure that comes to the fore in the story that you weave. So tell me about the awkward ballerina. Is it based entirely on what you were going through as a kid?
Yeah, so it is. All the stories are true stories. They're all things that happen 100%. The reason it's called the awkward ballerina is because when I was very young, I wanted to be a ballet dancer. And of course, living with cerebral palsy, that was not something that I was going to be, that was not a goal I was going to be able to achieve, not with the physical limitations that I have. So, but my parents were always very encouraging. So, you know, they tried to enforce that, you know, anything I set my mind to, I could do. And I've always lived by that. So I guess the stories revolve around my childhood, the challenges I faced, the bullies I dealt with, and I had a lot of them and I still have them today. So I talk about that. I talk about the past. I talk about the present. I talk about when I was young and the different challenges, the different things I wanted to try. I joined a soccer team. I joined choir. I joined a bunch of musical theater and different things like that, because I always had this love for the stage. And so I figured, you know, if I can't be a dancer, well then I'll at least make it on that stage at some point. So I talk about all of these things, these things, these goals that I had for myself, the challenges that would sometimes, you know, end up hitting me without realization, and then I would have to overcome those. I just did this show because I wanted people to understand that despite obstacles, you can do the things you want to do. Maybe they have to be a little different, but you can do them. And so that was the whole premise of this show. And for people to understand that, you know, everybody has things. We all have things. And we all have to live with those things, whatever they are. And you just have to be kind, because you don't know what that person is living with. And I felt like, especially with the last couple of years and the things we've been going through, that the world really needs that. The world really needs kindness and hope. So this story has been important to me for a long time. And 17 years later, I decided to write it during the pandemic. So I'm hoping that it offers comfort to those who deal with similar situations. And it also opens people's minds to what some people have to live with on a day-to-day.
That is Kristen Govers, who is presenting The Awkward Ballerina. It was a fringe play that she performed in June, so 2 months ago, and now it is coming to the Pauline Julien Theater in Pierrefonds-Roxborough, where she happened to have grown up. So Kristen, as a child, you're dealing with motor issues. You had trouble walking when you were much younger, a toddler, and that's how you got to your diagnosis. But what was it about ballet that like inspired you? Do you think you wanted to do that in spite of, you know, the physical difficulties you were dealing with, or did you just want to be like, you know, performing and, you know, being in the limelight? What was it for you?
I mean, I grew up with a family, my dad's side of the family, they were very musical. My grandfather played piano. My dad plays piano. They were in musical theater. And so I saw that growing up. And so, yes, it's definitely a love for that. It's definitely a love for music, for theater, for the arts. But I also think that I was always drawn to things that were more difficult for me. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because I had those limitations that I felt, you know, hey, I'm going to do that. If that person can do it, so can I. I mean, I talk about it in my show. I joined soccer, had limits there, and I still wanted to do it 2 seasons in a row. I wanted to ski, even though that was not something that was recommended to me. I wanted to get on a pair of skates. I wanted to snowboard. So anything that was maybe considered more difficult or more challenging for me, I kind of wanted to beat the odds. And never with it ending very, very gracefully. But I guess I felt like, hey, I'm going to try this anyways, and we'll see how it goes. Maybe it'll work out.
What did your physical limitations mean for actual like practicing of ballet? Were you able to kind of follow along in class? Like, did you join a class? What was that?
So
like?
No, the thing is, my mom had looked into it, but because, and I don't know what it's like today, but back then that kind of stuff didn't happen. If you had a limitation like that, it was sort of like, well, no, she has to audition and there's no way that's going to happen for her. Right. So, And that's unfortunate, but you know, we've come a long way. I see that those kind of things are much more accepting. People are much more accepting and they make room for everybody. But I think that back then, it wasn't something that was offered to me, right? It wasn't something that was made accessible to me. And we still have a long way to go with that, I think, in respect to a lot of things.
Yeah. That is Kristen Govers, who is presenting her show, The Awkward Ballerina. It is a solo performance. Do you think it's easier for kids nowadays who are growing up with cerebral palsy to embark on different things? Like, is that something you might have noticed?
I don't know if I would say I noticed that specifically. I would just say that I noticed that accessibility is becoming more recognized. People are thinking about it more, you know? Oh, maybe we should put an elevator. Maybe we should put a ramp. You know, when I started high school, no one asked me about that. But then when I ended up moving and we ended up changing, I changed high school and they asked me, they said, you know, they were asking if you would go around and tell us what we're missing in our school for someone that might need accessibility. And so I spent the day going around and telling them, well, you don't have any ramps in the bathroom, like any bars in the bathroom. Your stalls are small. You don't have a ramp for a wheelchair. You know, if there's a second floor, there's no elevator. You know, how is a wheelchair supposed to get into the library? It's not, the entrance isn't wide enough. There was a bunch of things. These doors aren't automatic. So, and I think when I, at the end of it, they just kind of looked at me and said, wow, like we didn't realize, you know? And so for me, and for me who isn't in a wheelchair, I felt like it was so important because I knew more about living with CP and what it was, and I had learned from my parents and I learned from the doctors that, hey, it's not so bad for me, but there's other people that have it, you know, way worse. And they want to feel important. They should feel important. I would want to feel important. So I think that in terms of accessibility, we are getting better. There is a lack of it in places, I think, but I think it's just a matter of time and eventually these things will, and this is the whole point of the show too, is to open this kind of dialogue, right?
Yeah, and to educate people, because I think once you get to learn about whatever condition, whatever life experience someone is going through, you carry that with you as an audience member for the rest of your life, that you have that kind of a bit of an opening more to your mind. If you didn't know someone who had CP, for example, beforehand, now you carry it with you. Speaking with Kristen Govers, talking about Awkward Ballerina, performed next week in Pierrefonds. Kristen, you mentioned earlier on that this was a pandemic play for you. Was it just a matter of having extra time on your hands and kind of, you know, something maybe you always toyed with and now you finally had an opportunity to put it to paper? Or was this just something that came up spontaneously for you?
Well, I studied English literature, which was always something I wanted to do because I love to write. And that is probably the second love of my life. So there was dancing and then there was writing. And I always tried to find time to write, but then, you know, life gets in the way. And I got a job as an editor and I worked as an editor for 6 years. And during the pandemic, I worked crazy hours and I decided I'm tired. I'm not enjoying my job and I'm losing out on my creative spark. So I quit my job during the pandemic. I joined a workshop with TJ Daw, who's pretty well known and
well-known solo performer. Yeah.
Super, super talented and super wonderful human being. So I joined his workshop and I wrote my play while I was in his workshop. The first draft of my play. And yes, this idea has been around for about 17 years. I wrote this with the idea of turning it into a book because it came from a short story that I had written. And they're just very personal stories. So I found it challenging to dig into that. TJ helps and the artists that I worked with over the span of time I was in the workshop, everyone was so wonderful. And it just kind of helped to open up those wounds, I should say, it helped to open them up. And I felt like you know, if I don't do this, I'm going to regret it, because it's always something that I've wanted to share with people. And so, yeah, so I wrote the show, and now I'm just hoping that that goal of spreading that awareness and promoting anti-bullying and getting people to come together, that goal comes true. You know,
you mentioned your son earlier on, he's 4. Did he come see the performance last summer?
Yeah. So he did. He was at my first show, and he was wonderful. He actually sat through the whole thing, and people were impressed that he had the attention span for a 4-year-old. But he walks around and tells everybody that I'm the awkward ballerina.
Oh,
so
it's a story that starts with your parents, you know, intervening when they realize you're not walking as you should, and now your own son is getting to see you on stage, in the spotlight, telling your own story. That's so meaningful.
Yeah, it's for me, it's so important for me that he sees this too. That's young people, you know. I think this story is important for young people, and that's why I also wrote it in respect to younger people as well, because I figured this wasn't just important for just anybody, you know. It doesn't really have an age group. But that young people could get a lot from this. They go to high school. They go to grade school. Some of them deal with, you know, disabilities. Some of them don't. But some of them are bullied. Some of them, you know, some of them deal with kids making fun of the fact that they have glasses or braces or, you know, and these are just, so it deals with all of these issues. It encompasses all of these issues. And I feel like it's important for young people to see this, because not only can they relate or possibly relate to it, but they can also use this story when they get into a situation where they might do something they shouldn't and think about it twice.
Kristen, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you and to hear your story. Thank you so much for coming on Upstage.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Kristen Govers. Her one-woman show documenting her childhood with cerebral palsy is called Awkward Ballerina. It comes to the Pauline Julien Community Performance Space in Pierrefonds, Roxborough in the West Island next week, Friday, September 2nd, and Saturday, September 3rd at 8 p.m. Tickets are available at pauline-julien.tuxedoba.com. You can also visit Kristen online at Two Left Feet Productions, MTL, on Facebook and Instagram. You can get more information about the show and her ongoing work there. Kristen is working on a part 2 to The Awkward Ballerina, as well as a translation of the original work into French. Oh yeah, and if that wasn't enough, she's also working on a book. Great to meet you, Kristen. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come? Well, that was one Fringe we just talked about, getting a fresh airing in late summer. And before the end of the hour, we'll introduce you to another Fringe success that is getting a second airing. Midsummer Bushwa won the Mainline Creativity Award. Now it's going to be performed as part of a parade downtown. Persephone Productions makes a point of giving new and emerging artists fresh opportunities to perform and hone their craft. Often, it's an actor's first booking straight out of theater school. And making that space is a shared passion for the two women now taking over the artistic director role. Rebecca Gibeon is an actor and director who recently oversaw, directed All Shall Be Well, Repercussion Theatre's Shakespeare in the Park Summer Tour. Her credits include the Shaw Festival, Centaur, and Talisman Theatre. Rebecca will be sharing the role with another born and raised Montrealer, Lila Gayemi. She's just returned to this city after cutting her teeth in the U.S. for the last decade or so, working for various theater companies. She also earned a BFA and MFA at Boston University School of Theater, and she currently teaches theater at The Study Private School. The first new work under Gibeon and Gayemi is a fitting one, English writer Mark Ravenhill's Pool No Water. And I think it's fitting because it fixes on the experience of a clique of young artists and wrestles with the questions of fame and success, goals that can be elusive to some, but easily and sometimes achieved sooner rather than later by others. And how the group deals with that is very interesting to see unfold. The young cast includes Lucas DiTecco, Audrey Shanna Ferris, Thomas Vallière, David Noel, Rosemary Saber, and Dakota Jamal Wellman. I spoke with co-artistic director of Persephone Productions, Rebecca Gibeon, yesterday.
Welcome to Upstage, Rebecca. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Congrats on your new role as co-artistic director of Persephone Productions. How does that feel?
It feels really exciting and just a tiny bit overwhelming, but there's something about it being a co-artistic director that is like incredibly comforting.
Yes, you're going to be working with Layla Gayemi, who isn't here with us today. She's lost her voice, which is too bad. So you're going to have to speak for the both of you. That must lessen, not the blow, but lessen the enormity of stepping into a big role like this. I know you've been working as a director, but to step up as an artistic director, it's a big jump career-wise.
It's a big jump. And to be honest, it's one that I like insisted I needed Layla with me to do. This opportunity first came about, I like thought of Layla immediately. She's such an amazing director and educator and theater person. And I just knew that this was the kind of thing I could only take on with someone like her with me. So I'm just so grateful that she said yes and that we're in this ship together.
Well, you have an acting background. She's more behind the scenes, if I'm getting that right. So tell mm-hmm. me how your friendship came to be.
We actually, I guess I could say that we became friends over a decade ago at Stratford Shakespeare School, which is like theater nerd camp. Mm. So a very specific type of person goes to a very intense Shakespeare camp. And so she and I met there, and that specific camp led to a very specific theater friendship. And although we're both from Montreal and I went to NTS and stayed in Montreal and then moved to Toronto, she went to BU in Boston. We've just kept in touch over the years. So then in the pandemic, we both ended up moving back to Montreal, and that's when we reconnected, I'd say, from like a theater point of view, and started talking about wanting to work together as theater people, as theater makers. And then Persephone just sort of fell from the sky in that perfect timing.
And we did really hope to have Layla here with us today, but she's lost her voice. So as you said, she went to school in Boston, and she's actually worked in a bunch of different festivals and theaters through the States over the last couple of years. I understand now she's teaching theater at the Study mm-hmm. private school, and is, I guess, kind of reintegrating back into the theater community scene. And that's so interesting. You have this friendship that goes back years. So you have a sense of trust already between the two of you.
There's something to be said about trust and about shared values, and inside that a certain amount of shared taste. But certainly in terms of the shared values, I think she and I have both for years really, really craved theater that supports emerging artists and theater that emphasizes diverse stories. So it just so happens that it was just like this amazing thing that Persephone actually encapsulates those values already, and those are values that she and I have really cared about for years.
Well, speaking of integrating young artists, that is Persephone's raison d'être. It's been around for years as being a place where a lot of young actors kind of had their first semi or fully professional experience. So what does that mean for you? You just talked about how that's meaningful, but like maybe you could reach back having been a young actor yourself, what it means to get that first kind of job.
I think it's something that I've kept with me. I mean, I think I still consider myself an emerging artist. And it's something that's been a driving force in my work forever. I think that the opportunity to get a professional contract, but also just to be in a room where you're trusted and that you're given a high bar, a high artistic bar, is just a huge aspect of growth. And it's something that is, I think, unfortunately, it's a rare thing that we offer emerging artists the opportunities that they need for that growth. It's hard, and I understand it's hard to trust someone, trust an artist that you don't know. Like I said, it's something that I just think is hugely important to diversify our artistic community, and to offer these opportunities to people that might not get them otherwise. And that is, like, it's a foundational part of, well, it is the foundation of our company, but Layla and I are hoping to expand that mandate in the sense that emerging artists in the past for Persephone was specifically a term used for new graduates. And we're hoping to expand that term to be used for anyone who considers themselves emerging, including any artist that has a desire to re-emerge, which is a sort of an expansion of our mandate that we shared in a general auditioning call that we did last fall to a huge successful reaction. There were so many people who craved the opportunity to re-emerge or consider themselves emerging artists, but felt that they had passed a certain age gap.
Right.
Where they didn't have the opportunity to sort of use that term or to find opportunities that would specifically allow them to grow.
So less about the age and really more about where you are in your career. And I'm sure with the pandemic, that's also been a huge influence. A lot of people put things on pause or gone off in different directions and are circling back to performance, perhaps. That is the voice of Rebecca Gibeon. That is the voice of Rebecca Gibeon, who is the new co-artistic director of Persephone Productions. And they're gearing up to present their first show of the season, Pool No Water, coming to the Siegel Center studio a week from today, September the 1st. And I'm chatting with Rebecca, and we were hoping as well to speak with Layla, but she's your co-artistic director. She's lost her voice. So interestingly enough, we talk about young artists and finding your way. The play that you guys have selected to work on is pretty apropos. It is about a young group of artists, and it's also about the question of, maybe not the question of success, but the question of whether success is a zero-sum game, how to make it, what happens when some people quote-unquote make it, and what happens when some people don't. It's a one-act play by Mark Ravenhill. Tell me more about the script.
It's a script that I have sort of had my eye on for years, I think for those exact reasons, that it's just so apropos of the young artist struggle and the thoughts that young artists grapple with. And then it's a script that popped into my brain again during the pandemic, because I think those questions about what it means to achieve success and the moral qualms of craving success in are brought to a completely new light in the context of the past 2.5 years that we've gone through. I think this idea of craving success, and as it's sort of talked about in the play, craving success in an almost individualistic sense, it takes on a certain darkness in a life or death context. And I think it's just a really interesting time to talk about that type of question. And then the play itself was written in 2001. So taking again those questions of success and putting them, just speaking those words in our 2022 context, where we have social media, where people's success is like blasted and shared in total new ways that Mark Ravenhill couldn't even have dreamed of in 2001. For all those reasons, I think it's a really interesting time to dive into this play.
Yeah, because no matter how many times, where you are, you open your phone or your laptop, you get bombarded by so many images of what it means to be successful. And it kind of puts you in the position of having to define what your success is. Can you tell me a little bit about the story, perhaps in the sense of who is the person who achieves success and perhaps sets the others on edge? There's, I think, at least six characters that we're talking about here, right? Almost like a Friends sitcom setup. Is it the situation where one person just becomes like mega successful overnight?
So the idea is that it's this group of artists that they all sort of grew up together as like young people who were hoping to become artists. And then one of them, not necessarily overnight, but one of them achieves success that is like just out of proportion. It is like impressive and surprising to the group. But that said, the whole play is through their perspective. So one could, it's hard to say whether or not she deserves that success or not, because we are, we learn about her success through the eyes of everyone else in the group who are grappling with this envy that they have for her success. I should also say that the play is written, what I call, it's like a choral monologue. It's just one big chunk of text. So it can be done with essentially any number of people, which makes it so much fun to direct, because the director's job then becomes to decide how many actors are going to tell the story and who's going to say what words. I've seen a version of this play where there is an actor playing that person who achieves success. We've chosen to not have an actor play that person, that she's this anonymous personality that is not someone that we meet. She's just, her story is told to us through their perspective and through their narration.
We're speaking with Rebecca Gibeon, who is the co-artistic director of Persephone Productions, gearing up for their first show of the season. Rebecca, I can't help but think about how becoming an artist and wanting to achieve something in the world of the arts, whether it's acting or maybe something else like writing a book or something, that can be really nebulous. It's hard to kind of, you might say, I love to win this prize or get cast here, but there are so many things out of your control. You can only really manage mm-hmm. your own, you know, habits and your own work. So I'm wondering if you've had any thoughts, you know, as an actor yourself, someone who's getting into directing, mm-hmm. has this changed your thoughts about what it means to be successful as an artist?
Oh, that's such a good, interesting question. I mean, I think in the context of this play, like there's something to be said for the immature aspect of wanting to be successful as like a point of arrival, and like the steps, the process to get there being unimportant. And it's just like this nebulous, vague success for the sake of success, as opposed to sort of wanting to be an actor because you crave working on a certain type of place, crave working on a certain type of text, or you like working in a community of people. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think for me, like it's a question that sort of changes sometimes depending on the day, really. But I know for me, one thing that grounds me inside that is working on a project that allows me to ground myself in some values, so I don't get lost in the sort of competition for success, which I think can be sort of an individualistic journey. So something like Persephone Productions being aimed at offering a platform for emerging artists, like the emerging artist in me is just so thrilled. Like I would have given anything to have someone like mentor me. And I had those people in some ways in my life, but this opportunity grounds me in a place that like it's like success in a completely different way, in a way that I wouldn't have imagined for myself, I think 10 years ago. And that feels like a really nice version of success.
Nice. Persephone is expanding its relationship with Equity, or the Canadian Actors Equity Association. In the past, I feel like I've seen Persephone shows that had two or three people on stage. There's going to be six for this performance. So what does that mean?
Well, I will say it started out with five, and then we had some auditions to recast because the show was going to take place in February, and then we had to postpone because of Omicron, and then we lost some actors, and then we just had too many actors that we loved, so we added a sixth person just because we had to. There were just
too
many.
Hard to make decisions.
It was too hard. We were just like, we're just adding one. But yeah, I think this play really is interesting in the context of like more voices. Persephone has had some smaller, some less small casts, but our goal moving forward is to have to be able to offer emerging actors equity contracts. I think it's a stepping stone. Ideally, down the line, it'll be a stepping stone towards allowing some actors to join equity if they'd like to. But it's also just I think it gives, at least I can speak for myself, that as a young actor being offered a professional contract was just, it was huge for my own growth. It just did something to my own self-esteem, really.
Yeah.
So that's what we're hoping to do down the line. But yeah, this is for us right now, quite a large cast. We have a video designer, composer, and music, and sound designer. And then we also have a video designer. So the team, it feels in some ways quite large, but I'm hoping it'll all sort of come together and feel right. We're starting tech next week, so everything will start. I'll be able to see it all coming together, I hope.
It's about to get very real.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Rebecca, congrats to you and to Layla for coming together in this new shared role operating the company. It's been really nice to speak with you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been really fun.
That was Rebecca Gibeon, new co-artistic director of Persephone Productions. She is just embarking on this role with Layla Gayemi. Rebecca is an actor and director. Layla teaches theater at The Study, and they are taking over from outgoing Persephone artistic director Gabrielle Soskin. Their first production of the season is Mark Ravenhill's Pool No Water. It opens 1 week from tonight on September 1st at the Siegel Center Studio, and it runs until September 15th. Tickets are $30, $20 for equity members and students, and they're available at siegelcenter.org. You can also visit persephoneproductions.org for more information.
Union United Church, Cinema Politica, and Catbird Productions are proud to invite you to a special community screening of Dear Jackie, a feature documentary by Henri Pardon. This special event will take place in Little Burgundy's historic Union United Church on Thursday, September 1st at 7 p.m., and the screening will be followed by a discussion with the director and participants from the film. Dear Jackie poetically tells the story of one of the oldest Black communities in Canada, Montreal's Little Burgundy, by way of a cinematic letter to Jackie Robinson, the first Black man to break the color barrier in professional baseball. It also masterfully connects to the present by challenging the myth of a post-racial society. Make sure not to miss this special event. Admission is on a first-come, first-served basis, and a minimum donation of $5 for the church is highly recommended. This event is sponsored by Caisse des Jardins du Sud-Ouest de Montréal and the Sud-Ouest Borough of Montreal. For more information, visit cinemapolitica.org. We hope to see you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Montrealers were so proud it happened in their city.
I'm Sarah DeA. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Earlier in the show, we met Kristen Govers, whose show Awkward Ballerina found its first audience at the Fringe this summer and is just about to be remounted. Now, a second Fringe show is finding a late in summer second life, Midsummer Bourgeois, an interdisciplinary reinvention of Shakespeare's tale of two couples, each person in love with someone else, who follow each other into a fairy territory one summer night. Midsummer Bourgeois is a creation of Adalia Pemberton-Smith, who weaves in contemporary dance, sketch comedy, and clown into the show. Her work was a hit with Fringe audiences, and they picked up the Mainline Creativity Award at the Fringe Awards, as well as a nomination for Outstanding Choreography. Midsummer will be remounted to audiences outdoors as part of the Festival des Arts des Ruelles, which sets up a parade and live performances in different boroughs of the city. The Festival Phare kicks off just this Monday, and it continues until September 11th. Midsummer will be performed as part of the parade that takes over the Ville-Marie Borough 1 week from tonight, Thursday, September the 1st. I spoke with Adalia and one of her performers and collaborators, Jean Bernard, yesterday. Adalia happened to be on a ferry at the time, which was very scenic, but it also explains some of the wind and the noise you'll pick up during our chat. Here is our conversation from yesterday.
Welcome, Adalia and Jean, to Upstage. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah, for having us.
Adalia, what is the Midsummer Bourgeois experience? Tell me about the show.
It was a magical endeavor, a large cast of friends and artists, and we threw it together in a very short time. We were working on it for about 2 solid weeks in between our jobs and our lives, and then we put on a show with the Fringe. It was wild and playful. It was incorporating
theater improv and contemporary dance and clowning and our other skills.
A lot of disparate threads coming together. And sometimes when you put those things in, contemporary dance, sketch comedy, clowning, it can make quite a magical effect. But for you, was there a moment where you had a thought of like, how are these things going to come together? Like, did you have a moment?
Right at the beginning, I was thinking with all of the different realms we were coming at it from. And then I had a thought, A Midsummer Night's Dream also has these different worlds colliding. Maybe we could play with that. And right as I had that thought, I was like, oh my gosh, this is too much. These are too many things. And then I decided to go with it anyways, and it worked out. Yeah.
Congrats. Well, this is one of the shows I heard Fringe Buzz about this past festival. People were very genuinely excited, and I didn't get a chance to see it myself, but I could tell that people had this genuine kind of joy at having seen the show. Tell me, curious for you, Jean, Adelia is the producer, so she kind of, well, maybe there was some moments where you weren't sure what you were getting yourself into, but she's steering the boat. And when you get asked to come into the boat, Jean, like, what were you told and what were you expecting?
Well, I was expecting it to be an Adelia show. And what I mean by that is I know Adelia pretty well, and I have faith in her. I know she, sometimes we're not too sure where we're going, but we always get there. Adelia and I know each other from doing improv together, and we even did dinner theater together, which is a brutal experience. So if you can survive that together, you can survive anything. And I think it's just having faith in each other is the most important thing in putting on a show. If you don't have faith in Adelia and the other persons in the show, might as well not even do it.
Can I just ask what is so brutal about dinner theater?
Sometimes you get hired to do dinner theater for people that didn't know or want dinner theater. It was someone from the outside that hired you and thought it was maybe a good idea to put on a show at some dinner party. And so you have to perform while people are sort of in the middle of having dinner.
Which it's kind of like playing to a captive audience, a hostage audience, which maybe isn't quite so nice. The nice thing about performing at Fringe is people may not know anything about what you're working on, but they've kind of come in here by chance, or maybe they heard a good word or two, but generally people are receptive. What were the audiences like at the Fringe this past June?
I think they really loved it. One of the interesting benefits of colliding different art forms is that we get a whole crew of theater improvisers in there who we know, and they're watching contemporary dance, and maybe some of them have never seen that before. And you're getting to, play around with what the art world is and cross those lines. And it was exciting for people to see something also just lively and playful. Every night, the lines would shift, and you can tell when performers are on their toes isn't the right word, but just like really listening to each other.
And as you were saying, it was a big cast. So there's a lot of opportunities to kind of create those moments because there's a lot of people coming together on stage. Adelia, you're actually joining us from a ferry right now. Can you tell me where you're headed?
Yeah, I'm on a boat back to Vancouver mainland. I was on the island for a few days. I've been visiting family in BC and was supposed to be back in Montreal today, but the plane was delayed because of the thunderstorm.
Oh dear. But you have a week before the actual show happens. So you'll be back in Montreal. And it's okay, that's good. Good to hear. That is the voice of Adelia Pemberton-Smith, who is the producer of A Midsummer Bourgeois, or not A, there's just Midsummer Bourgeois. It won the Creativity Award at the Fringe Festival this past June, and it is going to be remounted in a different kind of format for the Festival des Arts du Noël. And joining us as well is performer Jean Bernal, who is in the show as well. I'm so glad both of you are here to join me. And Adelia, I'm also just enjoying the fact that you are on a ferry and there's this lot of water behind you. Jean, you're doing the interview from a balcony, so it looks like you're both kind of fittingly enough talking about a show set in the middle of summer. You're both outdoors, and I feel like that's a great vibe. So Daya, I was hoping you could walk me through the story of Midsummer Bourgeois. Does it follow the plot of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, or did you reinvent the story as well?
We used the skeleton of A Midsummer Night's Dream for all the entrances and exits of the characters, and we kept some of the core essence of the characters, but changed the setting and the way they interact and all of the lines. We just used, yeah, the skeleton structure that Shakespeare had created up until the lovers at the end getting all entangled.
You kept the part where the lovers get entangled, or you didn't?
Yeah, we didn't tie all of the knots that Shakespeare did at the end. Because we were time constrained with the Fringe, we only had 75 minutes. So we ended up cutting it a little bit short. And I think we could expand upon it and do more of a 2-hour play if we wanted to, yeah.
It's always nice when a story gets wrapped up with all the ties getting pulled together. But at the same time, is that kind of satisfying to leave some threads loose?
Yeah, it was. It left us wanting more, which is really great that we got some of these awards to continue exploring, because we have ideas we want to play with.
One of the awards you got was the Creativity Award at the Fringe. What was it like to have received that honor?
Oh, yeah, it's really beautiful. It feels, yeah, just so grateful to be part of the Montreal arts community and getting to know everybody, feeling like it's one big family, and it's lovely to have the opportunity to continue working together and getting to know another theater in the process.
Jean, what it was like for you to be a part of the process and to, you know, to join the show, not really knowing necessarily what to expect, except that you knew it was going to be a Dahlia production, and then to see it get, you know, all this recognition and to get rave reviews from audiences.
I was surprised, pleasantly surprised. I was just really, really floored that how much people responded to it and enjoyed it and laughed along with us, you know. It was really an honor to be a part of for me. I was truly shocked. Shocked.
That's kind of the specialness of the Fringe, is that you can walk into something and have done it a million times and you can kind of have an expectation of what the reaction is going to be. And sometimes you, as you were saying, pull something together with a group of friends and mm-hmm. there's this kind of chemical reaction and people end up loving it. So now 2 months have passed and you're getting ready to remount it again. How does that feel to be coming together once more and to try to make a success of something again? Why don't you tell me what you think, Italia?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really busy summer. I feel like it's often like this with projects. You kind of just set it to the side and then you come back and yeah, it's like a reunion. We get to all make this big soup again and see what it'll taste like, and hopefully it'll taste good. And yeah,
Jean, what does that feel like for you?
Yeah, usually theater, it's kind of when your run is done, it's done, it's over, and you just kind of live off the memory. So it's going to be interesting to see how we've all kind of matured, even just over the summer as performers, because most of us pursue other artistic endeavors and we work and we do a lot of other kinds of shows as well. So hopefully we come back and attack it with a new refreshed energy, and it'll have the same energy, but more polish and hopefully a little more maturity as well.
Well, that is Midsummer Bushwalk coming back to you at the Festival Art des Ruelles early September. Congrats, guys, on getting this chance to reach new audiences and have fun again, get to play again. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
That was Adalia Pemberton-Smith, the producer and creator of Midsummer Bushwalk, a riff on the Shakespearean comedy with sketch comedy, dance, and clowning. Along with one of the performers, Jean Bernard, they will remount their award-winning Fringe show as part of the Festival des Arts de Ruelle on Thursday, September the 1st. They will perform as part of a parade in the Ville-Marie Borough. It starts at 6 p.m. on Thursday. For more information on that show and the festival, visit festivalfar.com. That's festival. FAR.com. You can also visit the production company at mossyfae.com, MOSSYFAE.com, or at Mossy Society on social media. And the Festival Far officially kicks off this Monday, August 29th, runs until September 11th. They've got parades and events, live performances in just about every borough of Montreal, each on a different night. And then it all concludes on the weekend of September 9th, 10th, and 11th with live performances that won't be moving around on a parade, but will be happening in one spot. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight, you heard my four guests all have new performances beginning or happening a week from today. Creator and star of the awkward ballerina, Kristen Govers. She performs in Pierrefonds at the Salle Pauline Julien, September 2nd and 3rd. Rebecca Gibeon, new co-artistic director of Persephone Productions. Their latest show, Pool No Water, comes to the Siegel Center Studio next week. And Mossy Pay Production, Midsummer Bourgeois, Adalia Pemberton-Smith, and one of her performers, Jean Bernard. They will remount their show outdoors at Festival Art des Ruelles, far a week from tonight. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at CKUT.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
If your last vaccination against COVID-19 was more than 5 months ago, it's time to get another dose. Boosting your antibodies reduces the risk of getting or transmitting the virus, and booster doses help reduce the number of hospitalizations and deaths related to COVID-19. For better protection against the virus, book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine and follow the recommended vaccination schedule. Vaccination against COVID-19, a good way of extending our protection. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome to the August 25th edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show we have another lecture by Howard Zinn, this one titled American Exceptionalism. It was lectured, recorded in Cambridge, Massachusetts at MIT in March of 2005. This is the Howard Zinn Centenary. He was born in 1922. Alternative Radio describes Howard Zinn as one of the United States' premier radical historian. He was born in Brooklyn in 1922. His parents, poor immigrants, were constantly moving to stay, as he once told David Barsamian, one step ahead of the landlord. After high school, he went to work at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. During World War II, he saw combat duty as an Air Force bombardier. After the war, he went to Columbia University on the GI Bill. He taught at Spelman and the All-Black Women's College in Atlanta. He was an active figure in the civil rights movement and served on the board of the SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He was fired by Spelman for these activities. He was among the first to oppose U.S. aggression in Indochina. His book, Vietnam, The Logic of Withdrawal, was an instant classic. A principled opponent of imperialism and militarism, he was an advocate of nonviolent civil disobedience. He spoke and marched against the U.S. wars on Afghanistan and Iraq. His masterpiece, The People's History of the United States, continues to sell in huge numbers. Among his many other books are You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train, Failure to Quit, Reflections on an Optimistic Historian, and Original Zinn with David Barsamian.